Leslie. This is Genevieve.
And this is Brock, and we want to welcome you to 2020 and to Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping Podcast. We can't wait to bring you a whole new year's worth of episodes exploring the culinary world of Las Vegas. So thanks for joining us here and for reading all about local food and restaurants in Las Vegas Weekly magazine and at lasvegasweekly.com. So you're probably expecting us to talk about New Year's resolutions on this episode and how we're going to forego all the deliciously decadent food we're constantly surrounded by in Las Vegas. Well, we're not going to do that. What we are going to do, or at least what I'm planning to do, is exercise my own personal demons by talking about junk food and guilty pleasures. And since I'm betting I'm the guiltiest eater of the three of us, I bet I am.
I don't think so.
I'm going to go first with my confession. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's go.
No judging allowed. No judgment. My food addiction is definitely fried chicken. I'm not sure how this happened. I don't know where this came from. I didn't eat fried chicken very often as a kid, but it's a pretty serious issue now. I'll order a three-piece from any fast food chicken joint drive-through. I'll get wings from any sketchy video poker bar. I'll order chicken fingers at any franchise family restaurant, even though I know they're probably fresh out of the freezer. And I'll definitely stop on the way home and get a bunch of fried chicken from the deli at Albertsons and then proceed to eat it all by myself. I think it's the family pack, but I guess I'm my own family in this case.
I'm picturing like grease all over your car and just on everything.
I have eaten fried chicken in my car from Albertsons. Absolutely. It's much easier to destroy the evidence if it never makes it home, you know. I think the fried chicken dish that I've probably had most, again, no judgment here, people, is the spicy chicken sandwich from Wendy's. And I know that's not one of the popular and buzzed about sandwiches in the recent chicken sandwich battle across the country, but I had that thing 5 days a week during my senior year of high school from a Wendy's that's still standing to this day on Cheyenne and Rainbow, and I'll still have one every now and then just for old time's sake. But I like to get it without mayo, and sometimes I put barbecue sauce on it. I don't know if that's allowed. I did just try the Popeye sandwich, which you mentioned last time, Leslie, on the show.
Yeah.
And it was really good. It was really big, too. It was more filling than I thought it was going to
really
be.
It really is. It's so affordable.
Best bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But I feel like it needs more stuff on it. It was just, you know, chicken and sauce and some pickles, I guess. I wanted, like, some lettuce or something crispy on there to set it off
a little bit more. The first time I had one, it had a ton of pickles on it. So I think I just really lucked out. And I did eat it on the way home in my car, and I finished it before I even got to my door.
That's impressive. That's it. That's my fried chicken confession. I feel much better now. I'm guilt-free. Genevieve, do you have a fast food or a junk food favorite that you're willing to confess to?
Actually, I do. I admit I have a taco obsession, specifically fish tacos. And I'm not discriminating at all. I will, where it comes from, I will eat fish tacos from Del Taco every day, if I can. We don't have a lot of it here, but when I go to San Diego, I will visit all the roadside taco stands I can find. I will eat those suckers grilled, battered, and fried any which way. I will never, ever be tempted by a juicy burger if fish tacos are an option.
It is true that we don't have a lot of fish taco places here, which makes sense because there's no ocean inside.
Nope. But
where do you stand on Rubio's?
I don't love it as much as Del Taco. But I will go on Taco Tuesday because we're busy on Tuesdays and it's right across the street.
Wait, hang on. So you prefer a Del Taco fish taco to a Rubio's fish taco?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I do.
All right.
I mean, there's a variety of fish tacos at Rubio's.
Right.
Yeah.
The salmon one there is not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I don't love their corn tortilla is what I don't love.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Del Taco, known for their authentic
yes.
corn tortillas. But Del Taco love in this office.
There is. It's strong.
I don't know what the deal is.
Yep. We do love Del Taco here. Well, how about you, Leslie? Do you have any fast food or junk food favorites?
Oh, honestly, I love sweets, cookies, chocolate, basically any kind of dessert. If there are snacks in my house, they are getting eaten. I can just like mow down Oreos like no problem. So I just don't buy them because, yeah, they're just too tempting. Truth be told, there isn't a whole lot I don't like, and deep down, I kind of love almost all fast food. I just try to keep that a secret, and now it's out there. I have a knee-jerk aversion to most fast food now because I grew up on it, and when I eat it, I just end up feeling really guilty and bad about myself, but I totally cave from time to time, especially on road trips or when there's something new to try, which brings me to the biggest fast food trends of 2019. We already talked about the Popeyes chicken sandwich, and beyond that, there was a huge boom in plant-based proteins. So new age fake meat patties like the Impossible Burger and Beyond Meat Burger took chains across the country by storm, and I've been conducting my own unofficial taste test here in the Valley, despite the fact that I just said I try not to eat fast food often. I've tried most of the fake meat options offered in Vegas, and my favorite is definitely the Impossible Burger from Fatburger, and the Burger King Impossible Whopper is probably my second favorite, although I'm not going to like run out to go get one. There's one spot that I hadn't tried, and that was White Castle. So just before Christmas, Brock and I decided to hit up the White Castle in downtown Vegas and put the Impossible Burger to the ultimate slider test. So, I am going to order a cheese slider just to, like, because I haven't had White Castle in, like, probably 8 years or something.
So, we're going to do meat and meatless.
I'm going to,
so
yeah, side by side. Okay. But here's what I was thinking, is this is going to be interesting for you because you've never had White Castle?
I have had White Castle, but I had never had it until it opened in Las Vegas. Not even, like, bought from the store, the frozen.
Okay, good. Those aren't real.
They're not real.
That doesn't taste like a White Castle.
I'm sure
but
it
so,
because
I was thinking like the Impossible Burger is trying to mimic meat, but White Castle doesn't taste like meat, or it's like a very specific taste.
I agree.
So this is gonna be weird. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea what's gonna happen. But yeah, so I'm gonna do the cheese slider next to an Impossible slider and see what happens. So you get four. Should we just do two regular, two impossible? Or do you want more than that?
I don't know what I want.
All right.
How many fish sliders are we going to eat?
I would eat a fish slider. You're forgetting that I'm disgusting.
You're underestimating how gross I can.
Okay, I'm ready. I grew up on White Castle, and then when I moved out to Vegas when I was 10, like, they weren't here until, what was that, like, 4 or 5 years ago?
I didn't know that White Castle was, I thought it was an East Coast thing.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that it had stretched into the Midwest.
Yeah, I don't know where it's from originally. But obviously, like, Harold and Kumar put that on the map, which was crazy because, you know, if you watched that movie and you lived in Vegas at the time, like, you didn't understand what that was all about. I am of the belief that if you, like, didn't grow up with it, you probably won't like it. Because it's just, but if you grew up with it, you're gonna just love it, and it's always nostalgic.
I don't like it. I don't hate it. I just feel like it's... I think it's like a great drunk.
Oh, yeah.
A great drunk food.
Right.
Because it has that, like, naughty greasiness to it that you want if you've been out partying.
Well, and
so in that way, it surprises me that it took so long for it to come to Las Vegas. Obviously, this is the perfect spot for one. The one on the Strip. Right in the center of the Strip.
Yeah.
Pretty much, so that's a good...
And that one used to have lines out the door for, like...
For months when
yeah.
it opened, yeah.
So people love them. Obviously, I... From what I remember, and like I said, it's been years. The last time I had one was at one of the foodie fests. It was a big deal that White Castle was coming here because it was before they opened. And, they're just... So they're, like, mushy, right? There's,
yes.
like, no substance to them whatsoever. And so, yeah, I just recall this, like, mushiness.
and like the onions, I think, that are on them. I think I remember that. And you can eat one in like 2 seconds.
Right. It's not very much food. It's a really thin meat patty.
Yeah.
And it's steamed basically.
Right.
Over onions.
Yeah.
It's mushy throughout. They don't put anything on it. It's not like they're putting like lettuce and tomatoes and stuff on it.
No. There's like no condiments.
I feel like you have to have the cheese though. To me, the cheese makes it work. So do you eat the meat one first? Or
I think so. I think
how thin the meat.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like the Impossible is actually like way heftier. I'm gonna take an up close. Because so these.
I feel like I want to eat a fake one first because I do remember. Even though I haven't had as much White Castle as you, I do know what it tastes like. In my brain and in my mouth right now.
Okay, all right, then do it. Should we? I kind of want to try the regular first, just so I'm like excited.
Good.
All right.
Like this better than the regular one.
So, yeah, if you just gave me this, and I'm eating the regular one, it almost like I'd be like, this tastes like a sock or something, like just steamy. But it is still nostalgic. There's something about it. It's gross, but it's good. And I forgot that pickle. That adds like the little bit of texture.
The pickle is crucial.
Yeah. So you like that? The Impossible?
You know what's interesting is we're talking about how mushy they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably one of the hardest things when they're making these meat substitute patties. It's texture, like getting the texture right might be even more difficult than getting the flavor right.
Right.
But with White Castle, it's easier because they're already mushy,
right.
Soft. But this is like, look at that.
Yeah, it's way thicker.
That's like three times as thick probably as the regular.
It really is. And
pretty good, I like it.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm surprised the Impossible Burger would be at White Castle because if it's trying to emulate meat and White Castle, there isn't much meat here. You know, it's kind of a strange move. But all right, I'm going in. I did not finish my first one.
I'm gonna eat this whole thing before I.
I'm gonna try it. I don't like how it's so thick and square. Like, the thinness of the original, I think, actually is, like, easier on the eyes than this. It's kind of scary. Anyway, all right.
I just ate all of it in, like, a minute and a half.
Dude. I don't love this. Which is weird, because I actually like the Impossible Burger. I've eaten it at Fatburger numerous times. I have even ordered just the patty by itself at Greens and Proteins. And this, I'm putting ketchup on it, because I actually, it's not my favorite.
You hate it.
I don't hate it, but it doesn't taste like White Castle. Which is maybe why you like it.
Well, that is that's the mission, right, of these things. I feel like that is the, we've both had the Impossible Whopper, right?
Yes.
So, when I had that, I thought, this doesn't really taste like, I don't feel like it tasted particularly meaty, but yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job of making it taste like Burger King. I mean, yeah, Burger King.
Yeah, it has that char broiled flavor. Yeah. I did the same thing there where I ate, well, my friend ordered the regular Whopper and I ordered the Impossible, and so we got to try them both. And I ended up thinking the Impossible Whopper tasted more like how I remembered a Whopper than the regular Whopper itself. So I liked it more.
But not here at White Castle.
Not here at White Castle.
Do you usually put ketchup on your sliders here? You don't.
But I'm doing it on this one. Yeah, maybe the Impossible Burger tastes more like meat than the original. I think that's the issue.
I just took a bite of a regular cheese slider, and I agree with you. But I forgot about how much bread, the soft bread is really the
86.
Defining characteristic of biting a White Castle slider.
It is fluffy. It's super fluffy. You'll get some, like, crispy, maybe, like, kind of stale spots on the corner. But they're, yeah, the bread is super soft. I'm not gonna eat and finish the Impossible. I don't like it. I am gonna finish this one.
The regular meat slider is better than I remember. In this context, maybe you've affected me with your nostalgia. I love a good story.
You can't see me, but I basically just like fist pumps in the air.
What's your record for how many sliders you've had in one sitting at White Castle?
I mean, keep in mind, I was 10 when I moved here. So
you weren't binging when you were...
No. And I've never had a drunken White Castle night. At least I hope not. That would be bad. I think probably max 4, but even that seems a lot. Like, they look really small, but they're pretty filling. Like, I think that bread is just... It's like a gut bomb, you know?
Those are both good. Both good today.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I do like White Castle. I don't know if I would order... I don't know if I would order the Impossible Slider, though, because... Kind of like, what's the point? You know,
right.
You're coming here for a very specific thing.
Yep. You're coming for the experience.
That's why fast food doing meatless options is so strange to me, because I just don't feel like there's that many people that are like, sure, Leslie, I'll go to... I'm a vegan, but yes.
Right.
I'll go to Burger King with you. I'll go to wherever. I'll go to Carl's Jr. with you. Oh, they have this now, so yes, I will go to you. Because you're never going to take your vegan friends to fast food.
Right. And, like, one of the big things, too, most vegans, at least that I know, still aren't going to eat this stuff because it's cooked on the same grill as the meat, typically. I'm not... Don't quote me on that, because I don't know if White Castle does that in particular, but I think, by and large, that's what the common practice is. And, of course, you're still supporting the industry because these restaurants obviously still mostly use meat products. So I don't think it's so much targeting vegans, although I do know, on the same token, a lot of vegans who don't have a healthy diet, they just do it for, like, animal rights reasons. So they are eating at, like, Taco Bell and Del Taco. So maybe this is a good option in that case. But I think overall, maybe, like, minimizing your footprint if you're in a pinch and you don't want to eat animal products and you're not, like, super concerned with the cross-contamination, I think it's a good move.
That's for if you go to White Castle 5 days a week, make one of those days an impossible day.
Right.
And then you can feel better about yourself.
Because you're going to need to.
I'm pretty full, but I'm going to try this...
Veggie patty.
Which looks to me a lot like the standard, like, Boca Burger patty that you would buy in...
Yeah, I haven't had one of these in forever.
Also, let's point out, there's nothing on this.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Do we even want to bite this?
No.
It's exactly what you think it's going to be.
Yeah, it's not good.
Veggie burger patties need all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They need the ketchups and mustards and lettuce and tomatoes.
Like, the patty itself, there's, like, actual visible vegetables in it. which I like. And if this were, like, if I bought these from the freezer section and made it at home, because it almost tastes like those Dr. Prager's patties.
Which it might
are,
be those.
Yeah, which are pretty good. So I don't hate the patty, but I hate the fact that, like you said, they don't put anything on it. If they dress this up with, like, an onion ring and some sauce, it would be pretty good. They should hire me.
Onion rings.
To
fix
help
everything.
Them out. Yeah, I'm not going to have another bite of that. I already did enough damage. Did you try the fries?
Yes. I like fries.
Are you,
I like all fries.
You're not partial to a crinkle cut versus like a shoestring?
All fried potato styles have their own merits.
True.
They're all worthwhile.
If I'm doing strictly fast food, crinkle cut is my favorite.
Is that another childhood thing?
No.
That's a Del Taco thing?
Del Taco. I mean, I, like, in high school, I lived off Del Taco in high school. Like, I think most Las Vegans in, like, the early 2000s did. So, yeah. I'm stuffed.
Yeah.
We still have two burgers. Three, really.
We're not going to eat these veggie ones.
No. No. Wait, so you ate?
I think the regular slider is the champion here.
Yes!
I think it is.
I win!
But that's a pretty good... I think this is probably the third fake meat fast food experience I've had. Mm. It might be the best one.
Wait.
I think the Impossible White Castle slider I might like more than the fake Whopper.
Really?
And more than the... I had fake Del Taco.
Didn't like that.
No, I don't like the crumbles.
Yeah.
That doesn't... I haven't... I've tried that at home, too. I bought that product, a couple different kinds, and I've not had any success with it yet.
You know what's really good? Little life hack. If you don't like the regular crumbles, vegan... We're talking vegan crumbles now. Buy soy riso.
That's pretty good.
It's so good.
I've had that. I haven't tried to do it that way, but
yeah, it comes in just like a tube that, like, it's made to mimic the, like, casing of a sausage, but it's plastic. And yeah, you just, like, plop that bad boy into some, you know, like, taco seasonings and vegetables and onions, and you got yourself a meal.
And there you have it. I made Brock a White Castle convert. That was really ridiculous. Thank you for tagging along with me, Brock. What about you, Genevieve? Do you have any fake meat faves?
I actually love the Impossible Burger. This isn't exactly fast food, but I had a really good one recently at the Black Tap at the Venetian. They just introduced some vegan and vegetarian options, and one of them is their classic cheeseburger, but made with the Impossible Burger. Maybe because I'm not a huge hamburger eater, but I couldn't tell the difference. The Impossible had the same texture, the same medium rare coloring. With all the condiments as the real one, it tastes just like the real meat counterpart. Also at home, I've been cooking Beyond Meat products quite a bit. And when this speaks to how much these meat substitutes have evolved, my 14-year-old son doesn't know he's not really eating meat, and I've never told him.
Oh my gosh.
I just tell him we're having burgers, and he's never once questioned it.
Well, he knows now.
He won't listen to this podcast, probably.
Well, taking the meat-free route may take some of the guilt out of your guilty pleasure burger cravings, but you don't have to patronize one of those big corporate restaurant chains in order to get a super tasty vegan sandwich in Las Vegas. The vegan dining scene has been booming in recent years, and it seems like there's a different kind of plant-based restaurant experience opening up every month. One of the newest is called No Butcher, and it's the first vegan deli in Las Vegas. It's at the corner of Spring Mountain and Rainbow. I visited No Butcher recently to check it out and talk to the owners, Sebastian Muller and Alicia Gilarducci, all about how they came up with their concept. I also devoured a really great vegan pulled pork sandwich, or rather the no pork sandwich, with a side of tasty potato salad made with veganaise.
So far, it's a big success. We had a grand opening weekend with 1,000 people here. They were wrapping around the building. We got a little nervous. Be careful what you wish for. We wished for a lot of people, and we got a lot of people, and we didn't terribly mess up that day.
No,
it was actually
pretty
smooth. We had a few soft openings before that, and
training
we had
paid off.
Yes, we have great staff. They come from other vegan restaurants, and they know how to work, especially in a quick service environment.
Sure.
We're training to be not just high quality, but also fast, for the single reason that we also going to open our drive-thru pretty soon. And so the whole concept has to work for a fast-paced restaurant.
How did you settle on this concept for your restaurant? Because obviously this is like the antithesis of what people would think a vegan restaurant would be.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, it's very creative. We just like to play with our meats and cheeses, and especially Alicia is a very creative, is the more creative part of us, and likes to, you know, whip up dishes every day, like new creations and sides and salads. So this is an outlet for our creativity on the one hand, and on the other hand, there's a strong demand. It just makes life so much easier for vegans to walk in, to know they don't have to read labels, and they get everything fresh, made from scratch, with a high quality. We have a lot of non-vegans, actually, too. And what they appreciate is this feeling of it's homemade. It's like my grandma maybe did it. One example is our potato salad. It's not really a vegan item. I mean, it has vegan mayonnaise in it. But a lot of people, vegans are not, just come here to enjoy something that's made from scratch. And a lot of the young people, to be honest, they don't really know how to cook anymore. They don't learn it, or they do Postmates and open boxes, and just something so fresh seems to be attractive for vegans and non-vegans. So when we look around, we normally have like half of the people only vegans, and the others are just friends, and we call them flexitarians or veg curious people, and we just like to bring the people together. So if you're asking about the concept, I guess it's a mixture of the skills that we have built and the creativity and then the demand, and also us being part of the vegan community. But if you look around, it's a place where we have a community table, so the idea is to bring a community together so that strangers might be able to talk to each other, and there's a lot of vegan activism going on. And
are you more trying to like replicate that for people who really are looking for an alternative for health reasons or whatever reasons? Or is it more about just making something that is delicious and fresh, and if it's close, that's good too?
It's definitely the latter. We've both been vegan for a while now, so I don't know that I can really say if it tastes, you know, how much it tastes like pulled pork. So it's going off of memory and definitely the satisfaction factor. And both of those things drive the menu for us. It's the things that we crave that we are not happy with already being on the market, you know, that we try to find something that satisfies the taste buds. And you know, visually is easy, getting it to taste really
well.
And January is Vegan Dining Month, presented by Vegan's Baby. It's called Veganuary, and everyone says I'm pronouncing it wrong, but I stand by it. A bunch of restaurants throughout the Valley are participating, including Mott 32, Border Grill, Tacotarian, Firefly. Check out We Are Veganuary on Instagram for more information.
If you live in Las Vegas and you listen to podcasts and you're interested in the local food scene, I'd be willing to bet you're also interested in local sports. The Las Vegas Sun has three different Vegas sports shows that you definitely need to follow. It all starts with the Vegas Golden Podcast, where Justin Emerson and Case Kiefer are talking all hockey all the time and keeping you fully informed on the latest and greatest from the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm just as obsessed with the Knights as I am with fried chicken, so I listen every week, and you should too. The Rebel Room is the best UNLV sports podcast out there. Mike Romala covers the Rebels for the Sun, and nobody does it better. And he's talking with Case and Ray Brewer about basketball, football, and everything else that matters from UNLV. And if you're a little bit younger or maybe old enough to have a kid in high school in Las Vegas, Prep Sports Now is for you. It has always been the Valley's leading podcast dedicated to the local prep sports scene. The guys on the Sun Sports team are second to none across the board, and you can get the full local sports picture from all three of these shows. Just go to lasvegassun.com/podcasts or subscribe at Apple Podcasts.
It's time to officially close the door on the Vegas food year of 2019. In case you missed it, Las Vegas Weekly's last issue of the year had our annual list of the best new restaurants of the year, and all three of us contributed to that list. Go to lasvegasweekly.com now and use that as your own personal checklist to make sure you didn't miss any of the city's top new dining destinations. As always, we're going to wind down with the best things we ate this month. Leslie, what was your most memorable meal from December?
I didn't eat out a lot this month, but there was one highly anticipated restaurant opening that I did attend, and that was David Chang's Major Domo. The spicy margarita they served at the grand opening party was delicious, and I'm a big fan of the prime rib and mashed potatoes that they were serving as well. That reception mainly stuck to small bites, so I'm pretty curious as to what the rest of the offerings are and definitely need to head back to check it out.
Well, I went to two really great dinners in December that's worthy of mentioning. Zuma at the Cosmopolitan will be offering a special New Year's Eve omakase menu paired with Dom Perignon. Super fancy, and I got to preview it. There are too many dishes to mention here, but the A5 Japanese Wagyu tataki, Iberico pork skewers, and a steady parade of sushi and sashimi were standouts. Also, Scotch 80 Prime at the Palms recently announced a new executive chef, Daniel Ontiveros, formerly of Bouchon and Rebouchon. He's introduced some new dishes to the menu worth checking out, including beef carpaccio and Colorado lamb chops. And of course, Scotch 80's whiskey program is just exceptional if you're a whiskey fan. It was a great dinner to close out the year for me, but definitely pay a visit and you won't be disappointed. Brock, what was the best thing you ate last month?
My favorite bite was definitely the roasted duck and pork belly and barbecue pork from New Asian Barbecue on Spring Mountain. Me and my family had this big potluck holiday meal, and one of my brothers brought all that stuff from that restaurant, which is a new restaurant, actually the second location of Asian Barbecue and Noodle, just up the street on Jones in Spring Mountain. And that's one of my all-time favorites. But I've been eating that stuff forever, and there was another dish I ate in December that totally caught me by surprise and was absolutely perfect. It's called a lamb shank pot pie on the menu, but it was sort of deconstructed. It had this beautifully braised lamb over mashed potatoes with these marinated vegetables and roasted tomatoes, and then on the side there was this great salt and thyme pie crust. It was so good, I could not stop eating it. And the crazy part is that I was at Lazy Dog at downtown Summerlin. We go there quite a bit, actually, and sit on the patio with our crazy little dog, Lulu. And they have a great beer list. And the food's always really good. But this dish was just perfect for winter and packed with flavor. And so extra props to Lazy Dog. It's not just for dogs. Now, Genevieve, you also wrote a piece for this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly, all about some of the new restaurants opening up this year. Which ones are you most excited about?
I'm probably most excited about the opening of Din Tai Fung at Aria, probably the most famous dumpling house in all of Asia. There are hundreds of them, and I know there's one in LA, right, Leslie?
There's a few in LA. And there's always a line.
And the one that's going to be opening here, I think that's going to be a game changer in the dumpling scene. There's no opening date yet, but it will be mid to late 2020, so look out for that. The second one I'm most excited about is Mayfair Supper Club, which will debut New Year's Eve, and it will be at Bellagio. It's an entertainment dining concept with the best feature of all, an unobstructed view of the fountains. I think it's going to be must visit destination for 2020.
That thing is, it's going to be where the Hyde nightclub used to be, right?
Right.
Like you said, right there on the fountains. And it's kind of, I think it's going to be very different from other restaurants that have entertainment. There's not very many of those, and there's a lot of talk of kind of the dinner show coming back to Vegas a little bit. So maybe this will help that trend along. I'm excited about that one too.
Cool. Well, that's it for this episode of Second Helping. Tune in all year long at lasvegasweekly.com/podcast or subscribe and listen at our Las Vegas Weekly YouTube page or on Apple Podcasts. If you like what you hear, please consider giving us a quick rating and review on Apple Podcasts as well. Special thanks for this episode go out to the No Butcher Vegan Deli and to Sonia Barcelona, who contributed her song Violent Water to the show. You can listen to Sonia's new album, Bitter Melon, at her website at artofsonia.com. Thanks again for listening to Second Helping. We'll come back next month.